the rest of you, if you'd open your Bibles up to Luke 24, we're going to think about that passage we read. Normally, as a church, we go through passages of the Bible in quite a lot of detail. This morning, I guess I'm skimming stones off this passage as we think about Easter. Have you ever had a dream that was so vivid, that was so good, that as you began to stir and wake from it, you tried to grab hold of it and stay in it? You know, it was such a great dream. You felt so at home, so loved, so happy that as you wake up, you just want to stay in that dream. Just a few more minutes. I wonder what was in that dream, or if you're like me and you never really dream, I wonder what it would be. If you were to have a dream where you were at your happiest, where everything was secure and safe, maybe it would be to do with somebody. Maybe there is someone you've loved and lost. Someone who loved you unconditionally and was for you, and you knew it. And so whenever you saw them, there was a sense of just being safe and secure and known. And maybe in that dream for a few minutes, you got to experience that again. Maybe for you, the dream would be or is of a place. Maybe you've got your happy place. The place where you feel free and safe. The place where you feel like you can be yourself. Maybe actually, for some of you, it's both of those things together. Maybe it's a person and it's a place. Well, have you ever wondered where those dreams come from? Where those longings come from? That idea of someone who knows us as we are and loves us and welcomes us and with whom we can be totally secure and safe, who we can trust no matter what. And a place where there is absolute security and hope. Do you know, the first Easter Sunday morning tells us they aren't longings that are abnormal. They are longings that we are created to have. And the first Easter Sunday morning promises us that that greatest dream, actually one day the world will be better than that moment. And that first Easter Sunday tells us that that promise isn't vague or escapist or impossible to hold on to, but it's real and tangible and all the brighter and better for it. But it begins with the opposite. If you look down at chapter 24 of Luke and verse 1, it begins amidst a nightmare of grief and guilt and fear and insecurity, of hopes destroyed and trust shattered. We as humans are hardwired for hope. We need it, don't we? In fact, we find life hardest when we don't see any hope, or when there is hope, but we can never get to it. Well, that's the women in verse 1. They are trudging to the tomb, going to stand at a graveside, and it's a familiar scene, isn't it? We have all been there, stood at a graveside, longing for someone that we can no longer see, and with something feeling wrong and disconnected and broken. And these women are going to anoint a dead body. Notice that they spent the Friday, chapter 23, verse 56, tells us, preparing spices and ointments to anoint a dead body. And they're going to the tomb to do just that. The body's been in there a few days. It's beginning to decay, and they're going to make it smell a bit nicer. But it's no ordinary person in the tomb. It's Jesus, who they believed was the Messiah. God's long-promised king come to save his people, but who suddenly in the space of 24 hours have been betrayed, arrested, tried, convicted despite being innocent, brutally crucified, and was now dead and buried in a tomb. Their world turned upside down, their hopes entombed with him. These women had seen him hanging on the cross with the nails holding him in place. They'd heard his final cry. They'd followed, stunned, to the tomb as Jesus was wrapped and put in the tomb. And now as they trudged to that tomb, it was with no hope of seeing Jesus at all. They knew, just as we knew, that the dead don't come back to life. Or why would they have prepared the spices? But look at verse 2. When they get there, they found the stone rolled away. They go in, they don't find the body. And then suddenly two angels stood there. And as they're wondering what happened, the angels speak, "Why are you looking for the living among the dead? He's not here, he is risen." Words that turn their reality upside down. They're actually words that, if we take them seriously, turn our reality upside down, don't they? They turn the world upside down. Because they say to us, what if there is life after death? What if death isn't the end? And Easter Sunday is proof that's true. You'll see what happens. Verse 9, they hurry back from the tomb. Verse 11, they get to the disciples. And what do you find? Not gullible believers, but the disciples did not believe the women because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Peter didn't believe them so much that what does he do? He runs to the tomb. I can't believe it, his actions say. People don't just come back from the dead. And what does he find there? He finds, verse 12, an empty, echoey space. Strips of linen lying by themselves, but no body. And he goes away wondering what's happened. Now, if that's where Luke's gospel stopped, we'd be left with something of an Agatha Christie story, wouldn't we? Not a locked room, but an open tomb. Not a dead body with a dagger in it in the library, but an empty tomb with no body, and a body disappeared. And the question would be, what has happened? Now, you may be thinking, oh, there are lots of options. Maybe someone stole it. Maybe the authorities moved it. Maybe the women hallucinated all of this, or any one of a number of other theories. But do you notice that's not where Luke stops? If it stopped there, those theories would be possible, wouldn't they? But look what happens next. Verses 13 to 35, as the disciples doubt and Peter ponders, Cleopas and another disciple begin walking back to Emmaus, carrying their shattered hopes and dreams with them. And while they're walking, someone comes up and walks alongside them. And amazingly, Luke tells us it's Jesus. But they don't recognize him. Maybe it's because they've got their heads down. Maybe it's because tears cloud their eyes. Maybe there was something God was doing that kept them from seeing him. But as they walk back, Jesus walks with them, physically present, his feet stirring up dust just as theirs did, hearing his footfalls, hearing him speak. And then as he talks with them about what's happened in Jerusalem, he begins explaining to them what the Bible says about who he is. And then we get Jesus physically present with them, verse 30, as he sits at a table with them, takes bread, lifts it up, breaks it, and hands it to them. Clearly not a ghost, but a physically present body. And then just as they get who it is, he disappears. And what do? They rush back to the city. It's about 7 miles. That's quite a run, isn't it? You know, I don't fancy doing that, and looking at most of you, nor do you. You know, 7 miles back to the city. And they run back and they get there, and what do they discover? Verse 33, they got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, it's true, the Lord has risen and appeared to Simon. They get there and find it's not just us. Peter's seen him too. See, if it was just them, they might have thought, I wonder if we just imagined it. But here's Peter. And then next week, we're going to look at the next passage where Jesus appears to the 11. If you read on and you get to 1 Corinthians, Paul lists all the appearances of Jesus, including to 500 people at one time. And over 40 days, Jesus keeps on appearing to people back alive again. Jesus' body wasn't missing. He is alive, resurrected, just as the angels say. See, this isn't an Agatha Christie where we've got to puzzle it out. Luke's done the piecing of pieces together for us. Luke writes for a friend of his, Theophilus, who's believed in Jesus, but he's now struggling with doubts. He's struggling to believe. And Luke wants to give Theophilus and everyone else who reads it, including us, lots of eyewitness accounts. That's what he's gathering. And so he gives us these three eyewitness accounts to the resurrection: Peter, Cleopas and his friend, and then the 12. But he also gives us something else. I wonder if you noticed what the angel said to the ladies. Look at verse 6. He's not here, he is risen. Remember how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee, the Son of Man must be delivered over to the hand of sinners, be crucified, and on the third day raised again. then they remembered his words. He also gives some other evidence. There are the eyewitnesses, but there's also the very words of Jesus. Jesus, three times in Luke already, has said before he died that he'd be betrayed, he'd die, he'd rise again. So look, the evidence that Jesus rose again is in his words. And look at verse 26. When Jesus is speaking to these two disciples trudging to Emmaus, he says this: did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them that was what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. It's not just that Jesus predicted it. Luke says to Theophilus and to us, the whole Bible always has predicted Jesus' resurrection. Right back to Genesis 3, where the promise is, at the moment Adam and Eve fell, when we fell with them, when we rebelled against God, that someone would come who would crush Satan, but be wounded himself. In the pictures of a Passover lamb. In so many of the prophetic promises. And Jesus' resurrection is true because it's the fulfillment of hundreds of years of the Bible. Do you know, there is a lot that hangs on the first Easter Sunday morning. Take away the resurrection, and the Bible actually isn't God-inspired anymore. If the resurrection didn't happen, it's just a dusty book of old stories that really don't mean an awful lot. It's a myth. But if the resurrection happened, it's the very word of God. I haven't got time this morning to go through why I believe the resurrection happened. But let me just encourage you, it's worth, if you're not sure, taking time to examine it. I'll chat with you afterwards. Bring me a black coffee and we can have a chat about, make sure it's a nice one, none of this instant rubbish, okay? And I'll talk to you about why I believe the resurrection happened, what I believe about the other alternate theories. Do you know, maybe you're a bit embarrassing. I don't really want to talk to Al. I'd rather, you know, I'm a bit socially introverted. Al might put me on the spot. I'd rather watch a video. There's loads of videos you can find on YouTube. There's a guy called Wesley Huff who's just done two really good ones on the evidence for the resurrection really happening, looking at historical things. Can I encourage you to do that? Maybe actually you want to look at the evidence Luke gives. Why not chat to someone you know in this church who will sit and read Luke's gospel with you? Maybe you could do a couple of verses a day and just WhatsApp each other about it. Maybe they actually, what if Luke was a bit, you know, what if he mistook the evidence? Maybe you want to look at another gospel. Well, at the back, there's one of these. It's quite small. It's John's gospel. Feel free to take it away with you and read it. And again, anyone from church you know will buy you coffee and cake. And they will make you coffee and cake if they're tight. Okay? And they will read it with you. There are four gospels. There's another one at the back, Mark's gospel. It's shorter. It's easy to read. Seriously. And it's only 16 chapters. And a lot of them are dead short. Mark's the machine gun preacher. He goes bang, 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 bang through events. 16 chapters instead of 24 if Luke's too long, or instead of 21 if John's too long. Grab one of those at the back. Take it and read it. Don't just dismiss the resurrection and Christianity because of what others say. Look at it for yourself. Why? Because let me just give you, as we close, three things Easter Sunday changes, and you'll see why it's so significant. Here's the first. If Jesus rose again, and he did, death is defeated. I've done a number of funerals. I have never stood waiting for someone to wake up. You know, I've never buried someone in the ground and said to the gravedigger, don't cover them up because they'll be up in a minute. Don't think about that for cremation. It's not pleasant, okay? But actually, you know, we know the dead die. But if Jesus rose again, it tells us death is not the end. There is more to life. And let me say, the Romans 100% knew how to kill people. Jesus definitely died. He's not resuscitated, but he is alive again physically and really. And that means we don't need to hope against hope that death is not the end. For those of us who trust in Jesus, Easter reminds us we have a hope that there is life beyond death. And it frees us from that sense of having a ticking clock. I was listening to someone this week who's just turned 60. He was saying, now I feel all the pressure to do all the things in my life that I need to do in the next 10, 15 years. because otherwise I'm going to miss it. Easter Sunday tells us, actually, we miss nothing because there is life beyond. There is no ticking clock. There is no fear in death. It is just closing our eyes and going to sleep to be woken and welcomed by Jesus into new life. See why Easter is so significant? That's one reason. Here's the second. The wages of sin are paid. When you get your payslip, you get what you've earned, don't you? I bet you never go to your boss and say, just thank you so much for the gift that is my wages. You are so generous, I don't deserve it. You know, no one I know has ever said that to their boss. I mean, it might freak them out. You might want to try it. But actually, we get what we deserve in our wage slip, don't we? The Bible tells us there is an eternal wage slip. And it says this, the wages of sin is death. But if Jesus rose again, it tells us death can be overturned. Sin can be paid for and we can be forgiven. That is great news. Here's the third reason Easter Sunday changes everything. We can finally and fully be who we were made to be. Remember the dream we started off with? Those people who maybe are in it who loved you and welcomed you and made you feel secure and loved you no matter what. That place where everything was just right and you knew joy. Do you know those two things point us to the truth of that is what we were made for. We were made to know God and enjoy him forever. But because of sin, we lose that. The promise of Easter Sunday is Jesus comes back, and the first word he speaks to his disciples when he sees them all together is peace. Not shh, peace. You're right with God. Your relationships are fixed. Everything is at peace. It's that longing that that dream we thought about at the start often is about. Peace, contentment, joy, happiness, to be seen and known fully by our Creator and welcomed. Easter Sunday has massive implications. Easter Sunday tells us how God feels about us, regardless of how we feel about him. He loves us enough to send his son to rescue us and bring us into his kingdom because he wants us to know the freedom of being his children, forgiven and welcomed without the fear of death, with